Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and coming up in this hour's series, we begin the start of a new set of stories from three different programs. Later on, Terry and the Pirates, and yours truly, Johnny Deller. But first, the first of 10 episodes of the story City of the Dead, presented on Adventures by Morse. From radio writer Carlton E. Morse, the syndicated series would last throughout the entire year of 1944, alternating between 10 and three-part episodes. The first from January 8, 1944.
Adventures by Morse.
Carlton E. Morse presents...
The City of the Dead, featuring Captain Friday.
If you like high adventure, come with me. If you like the stealth of intrigue, come with me. If you like blood and thunder, come with me.
But first, listen to a word from our sponsor. The City of the Dead. There are 10,000 citizens in the City of the Dead, each with a white marble slab indicating each residence. The gates of the City of the Dead have long been closed to newcomers. It is a city whose population has remained unchanged for the last 10 years. And the mayor of this city is Joshua Friday. Some call him caretaker of the old cemetery in the valley. But anyone who knows Joshua Friday at all calls him mayor. He is the only living person in the City of the Dead. That is, unless you care to include Lammy Fink, a slow-witted fellow who does kitchen police duty and a little gardening in the city during the day and retires beyond its precincts at night. The City of the Dead lies in a tiny valley 25 miles from the suburb of a great city. It is off the main highway and completely isolated from the world. But now it's 9 o'clock on a moonlit, windy night in October.
Come on, get out of that car. You heard me.
What do you want?
You want me to plug you?
Oh, Jimmy, do what he says.
You too, girl. Get out.
You let go of me.
You let that girl alone.
And get out of the car, both of you. Yeah. Now start walking. No, the other way.
But that's toward the graveyard.
You heard me. And don't look back or they'll pick up your bodies in the morgue wagon in the morning. Now get moving.
Jimmy, what's happening to us?
Keep walking. Don't look around.
They've stolen your machine.
I know it, Phyllis. I couldn't tackle two armed men.
Well, of course you couldn't.
Shouldn't have parked way out here in the country.
But it was nice. It was so still in the moonlight. Who do you suppose they were?
Probably car thieves. They didn't touch us.
Jimmy. Listen.
Church bell.
Well, there aren't any churches around here.
Oh, sure there is. That little old church down at the other end of the valley.
Well, but that's all falling to pieces. It hasn't been used for years.
That's right. Funny, isn't it?
Jimmy, I'm scared. Do we have to go on?
Well, look, Phyllis, there's a light ahead of us. You know what it is?
No. Oh, Jimmy, what's that?
Quick, get off the road, behind those bushes. Get down.
Oh, Jimmy. Jimmy, what was that? What was...
Shh.
Oh, I wish we were home.
Don't talk so loud, Phyllis. That fellow acted as though he were being chased.
Chased?
Listen. Don't hear anything, do you?
No.
Come on. Keep on the grass.
Where are we going?
You saw that light. I just remembered that the caretaker of the City of the Dead lives around here somewhere. That must be his place.
Oh, I don't like that name.
What? City of the Dead?
Yes. Graveyard's bad enough.
Well, anyway, we'll get him to let us use this phone and call the police and have a car sent out for us. Oh, there, you can see the outline of the house among the trees. See it?
Uh-huh. Looks awfully lonesome, doesn't it? Look, what are those?
We're inside the City of the Dead. Those are the tombstones glistening in the moonlight.
I don't like it, Jimmy.
Oh, here's the door.
Well, Jimmy, don't leave me.
I'm right here in the shadow.
He doesn't answer.
It's funny.
What do you want?
Oh, no.
Hey, where did you come from?
What do you want?
Are you the caretaker?
Supposing I am.
Oh, what made you sneak up on us from behind?
That you making that crazy noise.
What noise? Oh, you mean the man crying?
No, so 'twas you.
Oh, no. No, it wasn't. He passed us down the road. He was scared.
What are you doing here?
Why, our car was stolen from us.
Oh, stolen? Hi, Doc. Open the door.
Yes. Two men held us up. We want to phone to the city for help.
Do you hear, Doc?
They're coming, Mayor. Oh, here you are. Well, what have you there, Mayor?
Go on in, you two.
Yes, sir.
Lock up again, will you, Doc?
Sure. Were they the ones picking up the rumpus?
Tell a queer story. Here, you two, sit down. Said the car was stolen, Doc. Who stole it?
Well, I don't know. Just two gunmen.
Yeah.
Here, Mayor, you better let me do the questioning. We'll get further.
Go ahead.
What's your name, son?
James Parker, sir, and this is Miss Phyllis Carroll.
How do you do, Miss Carroll? Now, Mr. Parker, as I understand, you and Miss Carroll were out riding this evening.
Uh-huh. We were parked down the road near your house.
Parked? What for?
No, Mayor.
Well, it looks suspicious to me, Doc, with all these other goings on.
No, you just don't understand modern young folk, Mayor. You'd better let me do the talking. Now then, you were parked on the edge of the road, I take it?
Yes, sir.
And then what happened?
Well, two men suddenly appeared, one on each side of the car, and told us to put up our hands and get out of the car.
They were armed, you say?
Yeah, both of them. When we got out, they told us to keep walking in the direction of the graveyard.
What's that?
Oh, son, don't ever say that word again in front of the Mayor Friday. This is the city of the dead.
Oh, yes, sir. Sorry.
Yeah, go on.
Well, just as we saw the light in the caretaker's...
Mayor.
Yes, sir. Just as we saw the light in the mayor's house, we heard someone coming down the road as hard as he could run. He was scared.
Hysterical, huh?
Yes, sir, he was. Crying and sobbing.
Oh, Jimmy, you forgot about the bell.
Bell?
Yes, the church bell. It seemed to come from down at the other end of the city of the dead.
I guess it was from the old church down there.
You hear that, Mayor?
There ain't been no bell in them ruins for 10 years, Doc.
No bell? But we heard it.
But I tell
you... Never mind, Mayor. Now then, son, what happened after that?
Well, after the man ran by, we waited a few moments, then we came to the door and knocked. That's all.
Oh, I see. What do you make of it, Mayor?
Don't like it. Think they're lying.
But we're not. Listen, let me call up the police.
Police?
The police? Listen, I'm mayor of the city of the dead, and what I say goes.
Yes, sir.
And I ain't never had any police in this city, and I ain't never gonna have.
And besides, there isn't any telephone here.
But I saw a telephone wire.
Son, you heard me say there was no telephone here.
Oh, but I've got to let my mother know.
I'm sorry, Miss Carroll. It seems to be fate.
But what are we going to do? No one ever comes by this way.
Well, Mayor Friday will put you up for the night, I think. He has a couple of extra rooms, eh, Mayor?
Oh, sure.
Oh, but I've got to get home tonight.
Now, Miss Carroll, you better just take it all as an adventure and make the best of it. Isn't that right, son?
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe if we started to walk back, we could pick up a ride when we hit the main highway.
No. We couldn't think of letting you do that. You simply must accept Mayor Friday's hospitality. Now, I'll tell you what. While the mayor is fixing up your rooms, I'll brew us a cup of coffee.
But I don't want any coffee.
Oh, tut, tut. Of course you do. Yeah, there's still a fire in the kitchen stove. And the kettle's almost to a boil. We'll have coffee in a jiffy.
But I want to go home.
Don't say any more, Phyllis.
Jimmy, what does it mean?
I don't know. Something's up. I don't get it, but we better play up to him. Pretend like you thought nothing was the matter.
Well, are we prisoners?
Looks like it. Now, don't worry, though. I can take on these two old duffers if I have to.
Well, but who is this Doc person?
Oh, here he comes.
Now then, coffee's all ready. Yeah, there you are, Miss Carroll.
Thank you.
Yeah, and there you are, Mr. Parker.
Oh, thank you, sir.
And here's some buns. Better if they're hot, but they'll do for this service, night.
No, thank you. I'll just have coffee.
Sir, I thought that Mr. Mayor Friday lived here alone.
And you wonder who I am, eh? Well, I'm what your city doctors would call an old codger, I'm afraid. Just an old country doctor. Doc Tuner is what they call me.
But I wouldn't think they'd need a physician in the city of the dead.
Oh, no. The city of the dead isn't my seat of practice. That is, I should say, it wasn't my seat of practice. You see, son, I'm retired now. All my patients are dead.
Dead?
All of them?
Well, it's this way, young folks. I was a family doctor and had my little practice and was like a member of each family that I doctored. I knew all the little troubles and every pain of each of my patients. Never seemed to hanker to add new patients to my clientele, especially as I grew older. More coffee, Miss Carroll?
It does taste good.
Well, as time went on, I found myself laying more and more of my patients to rest in the City of the Dead.
But there hasn't been anyone buried in the City of the Dead for the last 10 years.
Well, this was years ago, son. Well, finally, about 10 years ago, I discovered that all the families I'd doctored were either dead or had moved away. As I hadn't added any new patients, I was a doctor without a practice.
But couldn't you have got more?
Oh, suppose I could, but I never made a practice of it, so I didn't hanker to begin trying at my age. I was getting well along, and besides, I had enough to live on.
Oh, I see.
Which means that you don't see at all. Well, son, as I said, I lost the last of my patients about the time they closed the City of the Dead as a burying place and opened up a newfangled cemetery over on the other side of the city. My last patient just slipped in under the bars, you might say. Last person to be buried here.
All your patients are buried in this great, the City of the Dead?
Every one of them. So you can see the City of the Dead has a very soft place in my heart. I often come down here and stay a spell with the mayor. It's kind of like being with old friends. Going down there among those little white headstones brings back all the old days to me.
And you just happen to be here on a visit tonight?
Huh? Oh, yeah. Oh, here comes the mayor.
Well, your room's just ready.
Yeah, that's good. I suppose, Miss Carroll, you'd better take the first room. Mr. Parker, you take the one right next to it. Is that right, Mayor?
Don't make no difference.
Well, good night. I hope you both sleep well. I'll call you for breakfast.
Good night, Dr. Tooner. And you too, Mr. Mayor Friday.
Good night, son. And you, Miss Carroll.
Yes. Good night.
Night, Phil. Remember, I'm right next door.
Night, Jim.
And now you, son.
Yeah. Hi. Hi out there. Hey, what do you mean by locking the door? Oh, Phyllis? Phyllis?
Jimmy, is that you?
Yes, Phyllis, they've locked me in and the window's barred.
Out of the night come two youngsters. Into the web of intrigue woven by two strange old characters they fall. Prisoners of Doc Tooner and Mayor Friday. Just who are... But before we go into that, a word from our sponsor. Having locked Jimmy Parker and Phyllis Carroll in adjoining bedrooms in the caretaker's cottage, old Doc Tooner and Mayor Friday are out among the gravestones investigating.
Well, look here, Mayor. We won't be able to find anything down here among the graves this time of night.
Yeah, moon's good. Anyway, I know every stick and stone in the City of the Dead. I'll know if anybody's been prowling around.
But morning will do just as well.
No, it won't. I'm going to look, and if I catch anybody prowling around, well, I got my gun.
But if the men got away, as those youngsters said...
Supposing they ain't telling the truth. All that nonsense about hearing a church bell.
Well, the girl was telling the truth, Mayor. I know the truth when I hear it.
Dang funny. Ain't no church bells within 20 miles of here. I tell you, Doc, I'm just going to raise old Ned if I catch anybody bothering any of my citizens. They come to the City of the Dead to rest, and I'm going to see that they get it.
No, of course, Mayor, but what gets me is why anyone should want to rob a 10-year-old grave and let... By Jove, Mayor.
Huh?
Well, never mind now. This is going to take some thinking over. I'll tell you when we get back to the house. Look yonder at the wisp of fog among the stones.
Yeah, them's the first bits of fog sweeping down the valley. Another couple of hours and the whole city will be so thick you can cut yourself a hunk.
Oh, strange how I love this old place. Those wisps of fog remind me of rays, nice, friendly phantoms.
Mm-hmm. Reckon you have the same feel about this place as me. Oh, listen.
Mm-hmm. There's your church bell.
But there ain't any bell, I tell you. I seen them take it out of the tower 10 years back when they quit using it.
Yeah, maybe your ears are deceiving you, but personally, I hear church bells.
Yeah, gives the fella the creeps, don't it?
Yeah, it seems to me there are altogether too many mysterious things happening in the City of the Dead, if you get what I mean.
I don't.
Well, for a city of quiet, decent folk that are supposed to be at their last resting place, there's a beastly lot of nocturnal activity.
Mm. Listen. Bell stopped.
Say, I got to talk, Mayor.
Yeah?
Why don't you put old Lammy Fink to keep a lookout at night? If he saw a prowler...
He'd have a fit. Lammy Fink. That addle brain wouldn't stay in the City of the Dead after dark for anything on earth.
Well, to be honest about it, Mayor, it looks to me like the kids are telling the truth. In the morning, we'd better feed them and send them on their way.
And have them go home and tell a long rigmarole about auto bandits and hysterical men and phantom church bells and us locking them up for the night?
Well, you can't keep them locked up indefinitely. Better turn them loose before any more harm's done.
Mighty funny they should show up right at this time. Looks queer to me. Somebody's been monkeying around in the City of the Dead for the last week. Then we up and catch a couple. Don't seem natural to me that they should be innocent.
Well, then I lied to him about the telephone. That's something else for him to talk about.
Guy's sakes, Doc. If they went to the police with all that, the City of the Dead would be run over with police and thrill hunters for weeks. I ain't gonna have it. What's this? Look here.
Man's cap.
Yes, it's a cap, all right.
Recognize it?
Yes.
You don't say, Mary.
Yes. Belongs to Lammy Fink.
Don't tell much. Might have left it here yesterday while he was working.
No, he didn't. I was by this way after he left last night. Wasn't here then. And anyway, he was working down at the other end of the city. And again, I seen him when he left after work. And he had it on his head then.
Well, those are three pretty definite reasons to make us believe that Lammy Fink isn't so afraid of the City of the Dead after dark as you thought. Likewise, it rather indicates that Lammy was down here tonight.
I know Lammy. He wasn't down here. Not if he could help it, he wasn't.
You're a stubborn fellow, Mayor. You deny their church bells even when you hear them. Now you intimate that a man's cap has arrived on the scene without reason or assistance.
Well, things ain't like they should be, Doc. Something's the matter. Somebody's desecrating the City of the Dead.
Well, the thing to do is to question Lammy tomorrow.
Shh, wait. Listen.
Church bell again. Say, I'm beginning to think you're right about investigating that old church. I'll get down with you tomorrow.
I ain't gonna wait till tomorrow. I'm going down there now.
Oh, come now, Mayor. It's getting foggier than the deuce. You won't be able to see anything.
Going anyway. If there's anything there, I'll see it.
Oh, what's the use of chasing phantom church bells this time of night?
Don't come if you don't want to. I'm going.
Well, if you're going, I might as well go, too.
You ain't fidgety at your age, are you, Doc?
Who, me? Blamed old fool. Come on. Can't see a blame thing.
Got a flashlight, Doc. Always carry one.
Dilapidated old ruin. Should have been torn down long ago.
Come on. I'll lead.
And look out where you step. Every board's full of rottenness. Floor's liable to collapse and let you through.
I ought to know that. Been in here often enough.
Hey, what in tunk is that?
Nothing but the rafters creaking. Can't you feel the whole building sway when the wind blows? It's that old.
And your whole shebang's likely to crash down on us.
I don't reckon so. Keep quiet.
What the deuce for? You don't expect to run into anything here, do you? Most folks have better sense than to risk their neck in this kind of a place.
If a bell rung, somebody rung it.
But you said there wasn't any bell.
Mm-hmm.
Last time I was in here is when we buried old man Burton. It was more than 10 years back. You remember old man Burton, Mayor?
Yeah.
Yeah, walked down this very aisle behind his coffin.
Oh, Lord Almighty, Mayor.
Just a screech owl, Doc.
That's the blamedest noise.
Shh, hold it.
I told you we should have waited until morning.
It ain't nothing. Come on.
Where are you going now?
We're going to climb up this here ladder into the belfry.
No, we're not.
I am.
Like as not, one of the rungs will give way and you'll break your neck.
I'm going to chance it.
Yeah, then let me go first.
No. This here's my funeral.
Well, be careful, Mayor. Listen to those rungs squeak under your weight.
Yeah. They'll hold, I guess. Are you coming?
Yes, of course. Hold that light down here so I can see what I'm doing. All right. I'm right behind you.
All right, Doc.
You wait for me at the top of the ladder.
Yeah.
If anything doing, I might as well be in on it.
All right, Doc.
Yeah, except for a bad case of goose pimples.
Now, I'm going to turn on the flashlight. Better crouch down in case there should be anything.
I'm crouched.
Mm-hmm. Look out! Look out! Huh? What's the matter? Didn't you see it? See what?
Whatever made that noise?
Them was pigeons. Scared the pie out of them.
But I saw a shape. Shadows.
Yeah, just a pigeon flying around.
I don't believe it. I saw something big.
Oh. Yeah, where is it, then? Couldn't have gone down the ladder. Couldn't have jumped out of the belfry without busting its neck.
Yeah, have your own way. Anyway, there isn't any bell up here.
Exactly like I told you.
So, you see, we had all this monkey business for nothing. You satisfied now?
I heard a bell tonight.
Yeah, of course you did. So did I.
Well, where did it come from? Ain't no other buildings around for 20 miles.
Yeah, looks to me like you deepened your mystery rather than solved it.
Yeah. Look. Cobwebs all over the place. And nobody else been up here for years. Anybody could tell that.
Hey, Mayor, let's go back to the house to do our cogitating. I'm not what you'd call comfortable perched up here in this old belfry.
Yeah, reckon we might as well go down.
Yeah. Yeah. Glad that's over. I'd make a blamed poor monkey at my age.
Come along.
Now, where do you think you're going?
Well, as long as I'm here, might as well look over the whole place.
You sure anxious to break a leg? You feel how springy these floorboards are? Liable to give away any minute.
We'll take a look behind the altar.
Yeah, what's back there?
Well, it used to be the preacher's study. It was never used, though, after the old bell ringer committed suicide in there.
By Jove, Mary, I'd forgotten about that. Old Sammy Martin hanged himself, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, locked the study off and never used it after that. Of course I remember now. 15 years ago, if it was a day.
It ain't locked no more, I don't reckon.
Look here, Mary, I'm not so certain I like this.
Like what?
Well, we've got a dead bell ringer.
Yeah?
No, we've got a phantom bell. You think there's any connection?
No. You?
I hope not.
Whoever heard of a doctor being scared of ghosts?
I don't recollect saying anything about being frightened. I'm just putting two and two together.
Mayor! Where are you? Where's the light? Are you hurt?
No, I'm all right. It just broke through the floor.
Hurt? Have you got the light?
No. I just skinned my shin. Blast this rotten place.
But the light.
Yes. Here it is. I hung on to it.
My soul, what was that?
Come from the study, didn't it?
Yes, sounded so.
Shh. Oh, that's only the rafters. Here, help me pull my leg out of this danged hole.
Well, wait a minute until I turn on the light.
No, leave it off. We'll sneak up on the study.
What do you mean, sneak up?
Here, give me your hand.
There you are. Now, look here, Mayor. I've had enough for one night.
I'm going to see what made that noise.
No fat chance of sneaking up on anything after the crash you made when you fell.
We'll sneak up to the door and throw it open.
Yeah, and get shot for our trouble.
No, we won't. We'll be lying flat on the floor.
Yeah.
Yes. Then we'll wriggle into the room.
Now, listen, I'm no snake.
Then we'll wait until we hear a noise.
You're crazy, Mayor.
Yes, maybe so. Anyway, as soon as we hear a noise, we'll flash on the light and nab whoever's there.
Just as easy as that.
Come on now. Don't make a sound. Here's the door. Lie down flat.
Right in front of the door?
Yes. It swings in. I'm right alongside you.
Well, who's going to open the door?
I am. I've unlatched it. All I got to do is give it a push.
Well, push.
Great jumping, Caesar. What was that, Doc?
Oh, I don't know, but whatever it was, it ran the full length of me.
Stepped on you?
It stepped on me and dang near ground me into the floor. Stepped smack on my head.
Are you hurt?
Well, I don't feel any too good.
Can you walk?
Oh, of course.
Well, our ghost seems to have gotten away. Turn on the light. Let's get into the room and look around.
Yeah, I could do with some light. There. Mayor, I haven't told you the worst yet.
Huh? The worst?
Yes, the worst. Mayor, whoever it was that ran over me didn't have shoes on. Look where his nails scratched my face.
Oh, gosh almighty, Doc. Wasn't it a man?
Well, I tell you, he was barefooted if it was.
Gee, Rushi. It'd take claws to make scratches like that. Here, tie your face up with this handkerchief. It's bleeding.
I hope you're satisfied.
Now, just a minute. I want to look around this study. Give me the flashlight.
No limit to your curiosity.
Shh.
There it is again. Whatever it is, it's hanging about outside.
Look there, Doc. It's a bell rope.
Bell rope?
Yes, see it? That claw-footed man, or whatever it is, has been ringing the bell from in here. Look where it disappears through the ceiling.
It's a new rope. Mayor, what are you doing?
I'm going to ring that dang bell.
Now, you want to prove to yourself that there is a bell, huh?
Yeah, of course there's a bell. I always knew there was.
Well, go ahead. Pull it. My face hurts.
I'll give it a yank that'll pull the whole contraption down.
Well, pull. Pull.
Yeah, here goes.
Mayor! Mayor! He's shot. It wasn't a bell, it was a trap.
You have just heard the opening episode of The City of the Dead, especially written and produced for your sponsor by Carlton E. Morse. What is this Clawfoot thing? What is the meaning of the phantom church bell? Why are Jimmy and Phyllis held prisoners? And finally, who shot Mayor Friday? And how and why? The mystery grows deeper and creepier next week with Chapter 2 entitled, I've Dug Up Something Ghastly.
Adventures by Morse on Tuned to Yesterday, Episode 1 of The City of the Dead, released for broadcast on January 8, 1944. This is an hour of series shows on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now on to an episode of Terry and the Pirates from November 21st, 1941. Leading up to this point in the series, Terry and his friends have been trying to infiltrate the lair of their nemesis, the Dragon Lady, to recover a valuable radio transmitter. They do have it in this episode, but now they have to escape. Broadcast on WGN Chicago.
Terry and the Pirates. Well, thanks to that Terry scope and the big stoop, the small portable radio transmitter, a new and effective invention, will soon be in the hands of Terry and his husky troubleshooting pal, Pat Ryan. Just you wait a minute and listen. But that doesn't mean our friends are safe. Oh, no. They have the invention, but right now they stand in a room in the house of the Dragon Lady. And Terry asks Pat the all-important question.
Well, Pat, how do we get away from here with this radio thing? It isn't any bigger than a good-sized loaf of bread, but we can't just walk away from Utong with it under our arm.
You're telling me.
Well, let's try and figure something out. Stoop, you go over to the door. Watch him for bad spelling. Catch him. Say, it was smart business on his part to switch those two big cabinets around. She fooled all of us, even the Dragon Lady. She thinks a third person stole the radio invention.
Yeah. And by the way, let's be sure the thing is in this cabinet.
Okay. Just so long as we're not surprised by somebody bouncing in here.
Doors in this thing are not locked very well. Nothing fancy. I think I can almost pry them loose with this paper cutter. You know, maybe we'd better leave the thing right in here until... Ah, now we'll see. Yes, it's in here, Terry. Look here. Who would think that a little box like this could cause all the headaches we've been through?
Gee, just think. A little shortwave broadcasting station no larger than...
A loaf of bread, yeah. Well, let's keep it hidden till we decide the next move.
Well, we can't stand in this room all day.
Maybe we can smuggle this thing to Dude and the girls and Connie. They're out in Dude's plane or near it. That ship may not get off the ground after last night's storm.
Hey, listen, Pat, isn't that... I can't see the landing field from here.
Speaking of airplanes, that Dude's plane, all right.
But he's leaving.
Sounds like it.
Well, what's the idea?
He's got two ideas, Terry. April and Burma. There's no place for those gals. They'll be back in Singapore out of this mess.
Yeah, but it sure leaves us in a spot.
Maybe, and maybe not. I'll breathe a lot easier if the ladies are out of the picture.
Well, we can't fly the radio thing out of these mountains. We know that. Say, Pat, why couldn't Stupor be our smuggler?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. He could carry it inside his blouse. Yeah, where would he go with it? He can't walk all the way back to Singapore with that radio invention.
Now, that's so.
Well, will you look who's outside looking in?
It's Connie. Then he didn't go in the plane with Dude.
It doesn't look like it. Open the window.
Hold it, Connie. I'll open the window.
Well, Connie, what's the bad word?
Please, Mr. Ryan Top, is good hello from Mr. Doodle.
Well, what did Dude say before he left? Were you with him?
That is so. Mr. Doodle explained he fly Missy April, Missy Burma in air wagon to safely so.
Yeah, we heard the plane leave and figured that much. Where'd they go?
Chongqing. That is safely. Says Mr. Doodle.
Chongqing, that isn't far.
Connie, did the Dragon Lady visit the plane and talk to Dude Hennick and the girls?
Perhaps I think such was so. She explained everything hopsy-dokey for a little while. But say frail ones depart before trouble upsets.
Frail ones?
Yes.
Oh, she wanted the girls to get out of Utong, eh?
It is better to be front legs of rabbit than hind legs of ox.
Well, I'm glad they got out of here. Hey, does she know you're here, Connie?
She say, okay, if I stay and get shot with boom bullets, same as Honorable Terry and Ryan Top.
Well, I'm glad you stayed, Connie, because I've got a plan. and it may work out.
You mean to get the radio transmitter out of here?
Yeah. You see that wagon out there? The one with the horses hitched to it?
Yeah.
Well, you see, it looks like it's half filled with hay.
Thousand pardons, but that is straw.
All right, straw. Well, if we can get under the hay or straw, we can ride away from this place.
Sure, but where's the wagon going?
How should I know? I don't care. As long as we're away from here.
Well, you have that revolver you took from Mr. Keel.
Yeah, six shots, and then what? No, Terry. Let's shake the dust of this place, but quick.
Well, what's the plan?
Now, come close to the window. You too, Connie.
Yep.
Now, here's what we'll do. That is, if Connie can beg or borrow a nice big loaf of bread.
What's a loaf of bread got to do with us getting into that wagon?
And come into that. Now, look, Connie, you scout around, and when you get the bread, you start out.
Did you think you could get away from Utong without being stopped?
Oh, please, Missy. Connie is go home. Too much trouble is enough and sometimes plenty.
What's that under your arm?
Food for long journey with feet. Connie had borrowed bread for stomach, which is thin with sorrow.
Let me see. I thought at first your gay friends might have sent you away from here with something else. Something about the size of that loaf of bread. Very well, you may go on your way. Where are your friends?
Perhaps three. Many friends in Singapore.
I mean the boy, Terry, and Mr. Ryan. They are around here.
Oh, they say... Connie, get along with feet, for goodness, hurry.
You may go. So long. You so long.
Please, Missy. Connie begs sorry for help to ride in horse wagon.
I see no reason why I shouldn't get rid of you quickly. Yes, you may ride on wagon. So long. Bye, so long.
My liver is torn with gratitude, Missy Rady. May absence of devil dreams attend you.
Do you hope? Yeah, what?
Good riddance. Now, take the men back. Let's get on with the search. I'd like to know what luck those two Americans are having. They'll never get away from Utong with that radio. I'll see to that.
Lobo!
How you doing, Terry?
I'm okay. As long as that driver doesn't use a pitchfork on this hay. Or is it straw?
Well, it tickles my nose. I hope I don't sneeze.
Well, don't think about it. You won't.
You got that radio doobany with you?
Yep. I got my telescope handy, too.
Okay. Then poke it out of this alfalfa and take a look around.
Good idea.
Well, we put it over in that human iceberg, eh? While she was chasing Connie, we got into this wagon and got all bedded down into this grass.
Straw, Pat.
Okay, so it's straw, and I won't get hay fever.
Well, I'm looking through this telescope.
What do you see? Hey, we must be stopping for something.
Well, break me up in little pieces. Guess who's sitting up front? It's Connie. Just as peaceful as you please.
Well, once you know, he hooked a ride. Right after the dragon lady caught him and let him go, eh?
Yeah. Shall I let him know we're hiding under this stuff?
No, no. What Connie don't know won't hurt him. Or us. We'll tell him later.
Swell idea of yours to have Connie walk away from Utong with a bundle under his arm, same size as a radio transmitter.
Yeah. I'll give myself a gold star for that. It worked, too.
Wonder where we're going.
Search me. Terry, look through that telescope again and find out where this delay. We've stopped on the road for some reason.
Maybe it's because there's an automobile coming.
Which way is the auto coming from?
Behind us. Must be from Utah. Driver, this wagon is standing on the road watching the car.
And it's coming from Utah? Uh-oh, what do you suppose this is?
I don't know. I just hope nobody saw us climb into this hay.
Oh, so now it's hay.
I don't care what it is, as long as we get safely away from Utah.
Can you make out the car or anything about it?
Well, I'll have another look through this. Yeah, it's the car from the Dragon Lady's place. And, Pat, it looks like we're going to spend a few uncomfortable moments.
Well, mark my words, tomorrow there'll be a fight. A honey of a fight. And thanks to the telescope,
our friends will have an even chance to win. Now, don't forget, boys and girls, that you can get a Terryscope just like the one in the show. You can see around corners with it, the way Terry does, and find out what's going on behind you without turning your head. Many's the time you'll have the other kids plenty puzzled if you have a Terryscope. Now, to get yours, just do this. Take a label from a can of Swell Libby's tomato juice and another from Libby's pineapple juice. On the back of one, print your full name and address and give your age. Then mail the labels with 10 cents to Terry in care of Libby's, Chicago, Illinois. Now, you know how to spell Libby's, L-I-B-B-Y-S. Now, get your labels and dime into the mail tonight so you'll get your Terryscope quick. Boy, will you be thrilled when it comes. Why, there's all kinds of fun for you in the Terryscope. Why, it's got secret codes you can use with your special pals and new games and a swell trick you can do with a picture of Big Soup, making him get real tall and then very short. So send in your Libby's tomato juice and Libby's pineapple juice labels with just 10 cents right away. Enclose your full name, address, and age, and mail to Terry in care of Libby's, Chicago, Illinois. Libby will shoot your Terryscope right back. And so, if you want to see how two Americans can hold their own against the pirates, then make a note to have a radio box seat for next Monday's transcribed adventure, the gayest, most slam-bang story of the year.
Terry and the Pirates on Tuned to Yesterday from November 21st, 1941 from WGN Chicago. We now wrap up this hour of series on Tuned to Yesterday with episode 1 of 5 of the daily version of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Previously, from 1948 to the close of the 1955 radio season in August of that year, it had been a half-hour show and would go back to that format after a quite lengthy run of 15-minute daily broadcasts featuring the new leading man as Johnny Dollar, Bob Bailey. This episode from October 3, 1955 on CBS called The McCormack Matter.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Bob Bailey as...
Johnny Dollar.
Mr. Dollar, this is Father Taggart. I'm calling you from Ossining. I'm one of the chaplains here at Sing Sing.
Oh, yes, sir. What can I do for you, Father?
Well, nothing for me, Mr. Dollar, but possibly for someone else. Michael Cairn, one of our inmates, asked me to contact you.
Michael Cairn?
Mm-hmm. You remember him? He wasn't sure you would.
Old-time grifter and con man who got tied up with an insurance fraud a few years ago, blonde fella?
Yes. Well, Michael wants to see you, Mr. Dollar. Could you possibly find the time to come up here?
Well, I don't know, Father. Is this something important?
It is to Michael.
Oh, well, look, I'll be in New York sometime next month. Maybe I'll get a chance to stop off.
Well, couldn't you possibly make it sooner?
What's the rush? He's going to be there quite a while, isn't he?
Not very long, I'm afraid. Michael is dying.
All right, Father, you can expect me.
Welcome to Johnny Dollar. Beginning tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Allied Casualty and Insurance Company Limited, Markham Building, Hartford, Connecticut. Attention, Ed Barth, Controller's Office. This is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the McCormack matter. Though you didn't authorize the investigation, Ed, I'm sure that once the facts are out, you will honor the following. Expense account, item 1, $7.95. Train fare and incidentals, Hartford to Ossining, New York. I was admitted inside the prison and greeted by Father Taggart. He's a tall, mild-looking man, a Jesuit, I believe. He had a pass all ready for me, and he led me straight to the prison infirmary.
Just in here. Michael will certainly appreciate your coming, Mr. Dollar.
I hope it satisfies whatever's on his mind. I can't imagine what it would be. You know, it was my investigation and testimony that put him in here, Father.
He told me all about that, and I'm sure it has nothing to do with why he wants to see you. See, his lungs started to go about 2 years ago, and there's just been no way to arrest the condition.
Does he know how close he is?
Oh, yes. And he's not afraid to die. Here we are, Mr. Dollar.
Oh.
What?
Hardly the same man I remember, Father.
He's had it bad lately. Lost a great deal of weight.
Yeah. Asleep?
Yes. Michael. Michael.
Oh.
Hey, Father.
I brought someone to see you.
What'd he say?
Hiya, Mike.
Oh, thanks for coming. Thanks, Johnny.
Thank Father Taggart here.
He's an all right guy, Johnny. He's just like you. I always said you were the best insurance cop.
Here, what's all this?
I'm kicking out, Johnny. Didn't you tell him, Father?
He told me, Mike.
Guess I didn't live right.
I'll be back in a little while. Thanks, Father.
You take it easy, Mike.
A lousy place to die, prison. But I ain't got my choice, thanks to you.
Well, it's just that you picked to do a couple of things that the law and some insurance companies didn't agree with, Mike.
I don't hold none of that against you. The guy does what he does. I don't know how to tell you this.
Maybe I better get the doctor. You shouldn't be talking so much.
No, wait. Johnny, look, you know I'm no crybaby. When the doctor gave me the news, I got to thinking. I ain't scared to blow out, you understand?
I know, Mike, I know.
It's just that I had a wife once, long time ago when I started out.
Oh?
Yeah, then I just kind of drifted out of her picture one day. Ain't got a cough drop, baby. Yeah, I guess it wouldn't cure what I got. Anyhow, I got to do something for her before I... Well, Johnny, I lay here and I get myself an idea.
Yeah, Mike?
Johnny, if there was some real easy money lying around, would you pick it up for me?
Depends on how clean it is, Mike, and where it's lying.
Sure. It's clean, all right. You can find that out for yourself.
All right.
Now, listen. Till they moved me down here in the infirmary, I roomed upstairs with Jojo Penny. You know him?
No, don't believe I do.
Car thief from the Hay States. He got his sabbatical 3 weeks ago. Paroled.
Uh-huh.
Well, I've been in the camp with a lot of guys, but Jojo Penny takes the cake. He's got a little old 5-year trick to put in. This Jojo, he does it like a vacation. You know, a real picnic. Every time he gets a chance out in the yard, he's taking sun. So he don't get the color, see?
Yeah.
When they push him in with me, I notice this. And I get to going over in my head. Yeah. Why does a guy whistle in a cell block, Johnny? Why is he treating it like a rest home?
Short term. He's got something outside waiting.
That's it, baby. He's got something waiting for him outside. Something that he knows will keep safe. Money.
Thought you said this was legitimate, Mike.
It is. Now, wait. I didn't ask Jojo anything about this. No, I figured it out myself. Then a couple of times I hear him yelling in his sleep. McCormick, he yells. McCormick. Huh? Makes sense now, Johnny?
Not yet.
The big heist, Johnny, the big heist. A few years ago, a rich guy named McCormick out on Long Island or someplace like that gets turned over for $100,000 worth of jewelry. You remember?
Vaguely.
Well, I'm thinking that Jojo Penny was in on it somewhere. Else why would he be singing and whistling and chilling himself around this flytrap for 5 years? Else why would he be talking about that when he's sleeping? McCormick.
Yeah. Maybe you've got something, Mike.
I know I got something, Johnny. And you got something, too.
Now, Mike, take it easy.
Oh, I'm all right. Don't you see? The insurance company must have a reward out. They always do. A reward.
Yeah, but, Mike, look.
I tell you, Jojo is the ginzo that done the job. Or he knows who did it. So, you look into it. Work on it. Maybe turn up the stuff and get the reward. Good, clean coin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Send half of it to my old lady, will you? You keep the rest yourself. What'd you say? Huh? Will you?
Ego facultati mihi ad apostolia, sedi tributa indulgentiam plenaria.
Mike Kern died 3 hours later. The last living thing he did was wink at me. Expense account, item 2, $14.20. Train fare and incidentals, Ossining to New York. I arrived at 2:15, dropped my bag off at the New Western, and went over to the Metropolitan Police Station to find out what I could about the McCormick matter. It was all pretty much as old Mike had told me. A Julian McCormick, living on Long Island, had suffered a $100,000 jewelry burglary in 1951. 12 suspects had been arrested and released. The case was marked open and unsolved. Allied Casualty had been the insurance company involved.
This is the adjustment office. Frank Porter speaking.
My name's Johnny Dollar, Mr. Porter. I'm an investigator.
Oh, I think I've heard of you, Mr. Dollar. Yeah?
Wonder if you could give me a little information about a claim your company handled in 1951. A man named Julian McCormick out on Long Island.
Gee whiz, long time ago. What about the McCormick claim?
I might have some information on it. I don't know yet. It's a long chance. I'm at police headquarters, and I notice you investigated for the insurance company. I'd like to talk to you.
Yeah, sure, but it's kind of late today. Tomorrow, okay?
Well, you can tell me this right now. Is there any reward being offered?
Gee whiz, kind of folds my sails.
How's that?
Well, asking about a reward. You sound like you can make full recovery and want to make sure that you'll be paid for it.
Well, I said it was just a long shot. How about the reward?
Well, that's pretty standard with us on cases like this. Yeah, I think it's $7,500, something like that. I'm not sure. Where are you staying?
New Weston.
Well, I'll look it up, get the exact figure, and call you there. How'll that be?
Fine, thanks. That'll be fine. Before I left the police station, I turned out a mug on Jojo Penny. He was a big, broad-shouldered lad with plenty of beef and a list of petty convictions, four of them in New York State. The last one was for carrying concealed weapons. His parole status was good, though, and the parole officer furnished me with his home address. The Allen Hotel, rates day, week, or month, 115th Street.
It's open. Come on in. Hiya.
Looking for Joe Penny.
Yes, sir. That's me.
My name's Johnny Dollar.
Yeah?
I just came down from Ossining. I saw a friend of yours up there, Joe.
Who was that?
Mike Cairn.
How's Mike?
Not so good. He died today.
That's too bad. He was a nice old coot. Kind of liked him.
Said if I ever saw you to say hello.
Uh-huh. He didn't give you my address.
No, I got it from the parole office.
You some kind of cop?
No, I work for an insurance company.
Oh.
Buy you a drink?
Sure. Why not?
Expense account, item 3, $4 even for drinks. I wanted to look at Jojo Penny and talk to him and figure out how I was going to go about getting information from him. And the more I saw and the more he talked, the more I wondered if whatever he might have said about the McCormick case in his sleep happened to some other McCormick. After all, a man with a long list of petty thieveries is hardly ever involved in a slick, big-time safe-cracking job. That takes another kind of talent, and one I was sure that Jojo didn't have.
So I just been taking it easy and looking around. I figure I can get a job pushing a truck or maybe a cab if I'm lucky. Got to get something to do. Parole officers kind of hard-nosed about things like that.
Yeah. Drink up. Want one more?
Oh, no thanks. Three's my limit. Like to keep in shape.
Sure. Say, you got anything to do?
Nothing special. Why?
Thought I might go out to Long Island later on tonight to say hello to an old friend of mine. If you haven't got anything to do, come on along.
You're okay, bub. Sure, why not? This friend of yours, he's an ex-con, too?
No, he never did any time. Just a friend. Want to say hello is all.
Oh.
Rich fella. His name's Julian McCormick.
You're very big with the hellos around here today, aren't you?
Anything wrong, Joe?
You probably are.
Why do you say that?
Nothing.
Ever know anyone named McCormick?
I knew a guy named Arnie McCormick once back in Salt Lake City. We were pals for a while.
Oh.
Yeah. Arnie was killed in the war. He'd got himself drafted in the infantry.
Maybe he's related to my friend Julian McCormick out on Long Island.
He wasn't related to anybody, not that bird. I'm leaving. I want to get up early tomorrow.
Why not come with me?
Thanks for the drinks.
He drifted off down the street and left me standing there. And one thing I was sure of, he had the name McCormick on his mind. Whether it was the right McCormick or the right case, I didn't know. Anyhow, he was my one big lead. So I was back at his hotel early the next morning and talking to the desk clerk.
Penny, did you say room 210?
Yeah, that's right.
Vamos.
What?
He left bag and baggage last night.
Well, where did he go? What's his forwarding address?
He didn't say. Just left.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's our star, Bob Bailey, to tell you about tomorrow's episode.
Thanks. Tomorrow, there's living proof that a pretty girl can be just as dangerous as a pretty girl. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Truly, Johnny Dollar, on Tuned 2 yesterday from the 3rd of October, 1955 on CBS. Wrapping up this hour of Tuned 2 yesterday, also marking the beginning of our weekly series. Be sure to be with us next week at the same time for a continuation of these great stories. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeBounier. Thanks for tuning in.